Good evening and welcome to Radio EduTalk. My name is David Noble and you're listening to the Professional Learning for Teachers channel. I'm delighted to have on the show this evening Fergal Kelly. Fergal, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, David.
Fantastic. And we're going to be hearing some aspects of professional learning within your own practice and that within your school. So it should be a really interesting show. It's great to have you back on, and hopefully we'll get some of the audience interacting this evening. As usual, if you're listening to a live show, you can tweet using the hashtag EduTalk, or you can email any comments or questions for Fergal to EduTalker, that's EduTalkr, at hotmail.co.uk. Fergal, could you just give listeners a kind of sort of brief background to your career in education?
Okay, well, I've been teaching for about 12 years or something like that. I trained in England, taught there for 3 years. Then I went to Africa for a year, worked as an advisory teacher with VSO, and then arrived in Scotland in 2006. So whilst in Scotland, I've worked in East Lothian the whole time, so I've taught in three of East Lothian schools, and I've spent a year and a half with the council as a Greg Funds Development Officer. And in that time, I've also done an MEd at Stirling University in Professional Inquiry and Education. And in my diminishing spare time, I've been involved in setting up the Pedagoo website as well, pedagoo.org. So, yeah, so I'm now working at Preston Lodge High School as a biology teacher, but also I'm a learning coach as well and do various other bits and bobs all around learning and professional learning in the school.
And fantastic, Fergal. Many people listening to the audio, whether the podcast or live show, will have been aware about your kind of master's journey. So has that all been put to bed now? Is that all, your master's studies completed?
Yeah, so I graduated in 2012, so done and dusted. Really pleased to have it done, but slightly mourning the loss of the challenge and support that it brought. Double-edged sword, really. You sort of, you're pulling your hair out trying to get it finished. And as soon as it's finished, you kind of wish that it wasn't over. But, yeah.
Yeah. I remember you speaking about the kind of camaraderie with your kind of fellow students. So, I mean, is that something that's kind of very unique to taking a master's study in the Saturday mornings and such like?
Yeah, I think, I mean, anyone who's, you know, getting out money and pitching up on a Saturday morning is of a certain wavelength, similar wavelength. And so that was good. But I think what I really miss the challenge and support that the university tutors brought. And I think that's something that we are not, that level of challenge we don't often bring to each other in schools. Partly because we don't have the confidence necessary, but also the culture and experience in order to do that in a sort of collegiate professional learning sort of way. So I really miss the input that you got from them. I feel like I learned absolutely loads through the masters, but I don't quite feel self-sufficient yet to sort of take my own learning forward, but then don't have the time, money to do a PhD. So it's a bit of a weird limbo phase. I'm okay just now, but I think another couple of years I'll be screaming out for something else, if that makes sense.
Yeah, is there anything on the horizon, any kind of ideas? I mean, you've spoken before about, you know, looking at PhD and EdD, but, knowing a lot of charter teachers, you know, talk about the idea of another master's in a different field, possibly.
I did explore a PhD, but I decided that it wasn't the right time. I mean, it's such a big commitment in terms of time and money. If I was going to do it, I'd want to do it right. And it dawned on me that it's not like a master's. You can't do it the occasional Saturday. You know, it's much more like a part-time job. It's a much, much bigger commitment. And I'd want to really do it well. So I don't know. I quite like the idea of taking it further rather doing a master's, doing another master's, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And the next
So,
half.
yeah, I'm not.
Sorry, Fergal, on you go.
No, it's all right.
I was just going to say that, you know, in the next 25 minutes or so, we'll be talking a lot about professional learning. It'll be interesting to see whether, you know, you regard that as an interchangeable term with CPD. But a couple of reflective questions that you've offered up for listeners, and I'll just read them out just now. So you're asking, how can we meaningfully support each other to enhance our professional learning in seemingly ever-diminishing time? And if we all want more and better professional learning, how can we make this happen in our current reality? Do you want to say a bit more about these questions that you're posing, or shall we just continue?
Oh, so I have to answer them?
No, not at all, Fair. Do you want to just elaborate on what you're kind of posing there?
I'm only joking. I'm only joking. I mean, I think when you asked for some effective questions, those are just sort of came to mind, and I think that's what sort of preoccupies. Those are the things that preoccupy me.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't claim to have the answers, but
yeah.
I think it's what drives me on. You know, teachers want professional learning. There's no, that's almost unanimous. You don't find a teacher who doesn't want professional learning. Now, what they want can come in many different shapes and sizes, but everybody wants it. So it's kind of, I always find it a bit hard to know. So why, you know, it's a sort of a, there's a market. So how do we actually, how can we fulfill that, you know, that open door, but without the money that maybe that used to be there in the past, that's what drives me on.
Yeah,
and just solve that rather than moan about it. Let's try and fix that. You know, there's a demand. Let's try and meet it.
And one way that you're trying to meet that demand is through this in-house program for professional learning. So again, many listeners will be familiar with your blog, and I mean, I'm saying only been maybe two or three posts this year, but you know, really high quality writing as ever from yourself, Fergal. So can you just take us through? I know people can go and read the blog post, but just take us through the kind of key points of this fairly new project, this in-house program.
Yeah, I mean, it's been something. I mean, it's not school. There's many schools will have twilight programs, and we've been talking about the need to do that very thing for a while, but we were a bit hesitant about how to actually do it, because what we didn't want was a random scattergun of courses that people would go along for a one-off twilight and then leave again. And the worst thing that we had, the thing that worried us most was, where does the progression come from? So, you know, if someone offers to run a twilight course on growth and fixed mindset, brilliant. But you can't just keep going to that every year. So, as a punter, I'm signing up for courses. 5 years in, what am I going to attend once I've attended all of these one-offs? And what meaningful impact are these courses going to have on the people attending and the kids ultimately? But so we've heard about some schools that have a very kind of detailed professional learning program. So you arrive in their school, this is the year one program, this is the year two program. And we didn't want to go down that road, partly because of the sort of logistics and of it all, and the demand that it would take to set something like that up, but also with the way the professional update is going, that really the route through professional learning shouldn't be being driven by the school, in our opinion. It should be driven by the professional. So that it's up to the person, the teacher, to decide what it is they need to do next. But it's the school's sort of has a responsibility to provide that, the opportunities for them, but not to set it in stone. So we just actually came up with a really simple thing where, okay, so anyone in the school can offer a course, but we just came up with four levels for our courses that are preset in terms of what they need. So an updating course that would be a one-off, and that would be primarily aimed at sort of technical things like CMIS training or, you know, things like that, SQA type stuff. And then, or you could offer an introducing course, which would be someone's first experience with something. So like if someone wanted to know more about solo taxonomy, they'd never heard of it, they would go to introducing course. So there'd be two sessions with a gap task in between. Or if they've heard of solo, but they're wanting to actually try it out, they would sign up for an applying level course, applying solo. It would be three twilight sessions with two gap tasks, and the second gap task would involve doing something differently in the classroom. Or if someone has like tried an approach out lots of times, but they really want to take things a lot further, then they would sign up for an inquiring level course, which would go into things in a lot more depth and explore the literature and evaluate the impact of the approach in terms of the desired outcomes. So really take things a lot deeper. So that's our structure, and we're piloting it at the minute. So we've set up a few courses at each of the levels to see how it goes. And in terms of organising, we're just using a WordPress site for folk to publish and publicise their courses and to sign up. So it's aimed at our staff, but it's open to everyone. We've had some of the courses already. We've had primary teachers from our cultures attending, so which is really good. So we're hoping that it'll grow like that, because we're, although it's for us, by us, but we're it's not a closed shop. So.
Yeah, I found that really interesting, because it's a WordPress blog, isn't it, that folks sign up through.
Yeah.
And it's obviously outward facing, and everything seems to be there with the kind of background reading and the kind of elevator pitch, and then the all the way through to kind of online evaluation form. So it's a really impressive website. It's fantastic to hear that. I'm trying to kind of time it from 5 to PL, you know, whether I can maybe myself or one of my colleagues could go over, but
more than welcome.
Thanks very much. I've just got a couple of questions about, you know, how is it? I know it is very early days, and I think the first session's only just started to run. So how is it going so far, and does it fit with any of your other work, say, from the last couple of years in your school?
Yeah, I mean, it is early days still, but it's good because there are conversations happening that wouldn't have happened before we set this up. And I think that's there's a latent potential in our system that we're not tapping into. It's quite frightening. You know, this has cost nothing but time. You know, I put a bit of time to making that WordPress site, but it's not that complicated. We've had support from our admin team, so there's someone on the admin team who gets the booking emails and manages that. Beyond that, it costs nothing, and all of a sudden, we did by setting this up. There have been, you know, conversations happening within staff and between staff and our cluster about teaching and learning in a way that wouldn't have happened before we set that up. So, you know, I'm happy as long as that's happening, as long as people are meeting and talking and sharing and learning from each other in a way that wouldn't have happened before. Then it's all good. The one thing I don't like to things that I've done before is this inquiring level course is a bit of a change in direction. So since my master's, which was in professional inquiry, we've been running professional inquiries in the school. And they've grown a little bit in that time in terms of the numbers, but not massively. You know, there's a few folk more involved each year, but it's not big numbers. So this is a bit of a change of tack for us. We're going to be branding up our inquiries as courses, and they hope that it'll be more appealing to folk. It'll be much more delineated. It'll have much more of a clear end point and purpose, and we'll have it just look a little bit more like a course and less like a never-ending massive commitment, which I think inquiries sometimes do look, because they do sometimes can go that way. So that is a deliberate shift in an attempt to increase the participation in inquiry. And to help that as well, we're talking to the GTC about the possibility of getting our inquiry level courses professionally recognised so that so when people complete them, they've got professional recognition. To try and raise the status of it and encourage folks to sign up. So that's part of the thinking of that.
Yeah, and I should say at this moment, of course, that the website that we're talking about and other links will be on the EduTalk site along with the audio later on, but we're referring to, it's an EduBuzz site, isn't it? It's www.edubuzz.org/PLPL, and definitely worth a rummage through. And just kind of looking at the way it's kind of structured at the moment, I mean, it seems to be something for everyone in terms of those who are wanting to kind of take forward their teaching and learning. But where's the kind of subject-specific professional learning opportunities? Is that still about buying in expertise, people going in external courses?
I mean, that is an issue because at the minute, it's not, we're not sort of publishing it out across all the other secondaries or whatever. So it's sort of an internal thing, really. We're not saying no to folks, but we're not like deliberately going out and selling ourselves. If that makes sense.
People
are welcome, but we're not blogging it. Mm-hmm. So that means in terms of secondary subject specialism, we're kind of limited to our own school at the minute. So if I was to offer a biology course, it'd be kind of pointless because it would just mainly be the other folk in my department. So we may as well just get together and do it. But I think we have to see how it goes. If other secondary folks start signing up for stuff, then it might be worth thinking about.
Mm-hmm. And we often hear, Fergal, about people talking maybe from the more kind of managerialist side of the education systems about the need for finite resources around professional learning to be concentrated on individual schools, school improvement plans. Is that a feature here? I'm thinking about the kind of the range of opportunities, and there is a range at present, but does it touch on areas of your school or authority improvement plans, and does it have to be something else bolted on or running concurrently?
I'll tell you what's driven it. We have been developing as a school like our approach to learning and teaching in a particular way, and there's no one else around us really doing this sort of an approach, and so when we look out, if we look outside for courses, there aren't really any for what it is that we're kind of, the folk are looking for, and actually increasingly the expertise is in the building, and so in reality what's driving it is the PRD process, because people are identifying needs that actually would be best met by other staff in our school and would be difficult to meet in any other way. So it's being driven by bottom up rather than like trying to tick a box on an improvement plan or anything like that. Like we must have an in-house CPD program, let's create an in-house CPD program. It's much more like, we need an in-house CPD program. Let's get it off the ground. Let's try something. Let's get going with it. Because before we know it, the next PRDs will be happening, and we're going to leave them. We need to have something in place for the next round of PRD, so that we've tried it out, we've ironed it out, and it should be working hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thinking.
And I noticed on your kind of taking further what you've just said there, Fergal, a line in your recent blog post where you say increasingly we need to look to ourselves to find the professional development opportunities we're looking for. And I just talking on last night's show about how I just find there's so many CPD opportunities out there that organisations, charities, for-profit companies are offering, whether it's around you know, a maths website, you know, all the way through to a particular approach to working or talking with young people in the classroom. So do you not agree that that's the case, or is it just that it's just not what you and your colleagues are looking for at this moment in time, maybe even particular to your school's needs?
I mean, I don't have anything against those sorts of things, but I think the issue with those sorts of opportunities is that they are, how do I phrase it? They are kind of they're quite often mistimed in terms of, like, they come out of the blue. So it's not like, they're not driven by the individual, they're driven by the organisation and their funding. So it's not, what do I need next? What do I need to be doing next? What do my learners need? It's an email comes in, there's this course and it's funded. Go. Do you know what I mean? There's nothing wrong with that, but I think there's a limit to what that sort of opportunity can realistically achieve in the long run. So the concept of professional update is based on the idea of individuals owning their own learning and driving their own learning. Now, that needs to be planned, and you need to be able to evaluate the impact of that. It needs to be holistic and long-term, lifelong learning, effectively. And where outside agencies can fit in, brilliant. I have nothing against that whatsoever. But I just kind of, I think there's a limit to what they can achieve in that kind of world, because it's quite often short term and driven by their agendas and their funding and their timetables. Mm-hmm. And if you don't arrive there with a need, then I don't think a massive chance of you taking that back to your learners in a sustainable and long term way.
But what you're saying, Fergal, about, you know, the approach at PL, being able to assist individuals to have their needs met in relation to their work with their classes, for example, does that mean that, I'm probably getting ahead of myself here, but does the risk then that any claimed collegiality or kind of communities are actually turned out to be contrived because, you know, people are only taking part for their own professional update PRD needs, and there's a risk that they might not see the wider kind of collegial possibilities within the school or cluster?
I don't know. I've experienced contrived collegiality before, to be honest, where, you know, there are collegiate time, there is working groups, everyone must be in a working group. The working groups all meet at this time, and in reality it's a bunch of people sat in a room and then two people go and do all the work. I have witnessed extreme contrived collegiality. I suppose it is always a risk. I don't see professional updates as being, if it's done well, then I think it will be encouraging people to think through what it is they need and then going ahead and meeting that need in whatever way is appropriate. But I can't imagine people sitting in one of our courses just to tick a box. I don't think it would tick a box necessarily, unless I suppose it's possible, yeah. But I don't think it's a massive risk, because it's being driven by need rather than to satisfy professional update, if that makes sense.
Oh, I'll remember that quote, Fergal. It's not been done to tick a box. That sounds like good CPD to me. Now, you were saying about the four different levels. Now, again, people can visit the website. The third and fourth levels are quite detailed in the sense of, you know, that there is a time commitment, and you talk about the gap tasks. I'm just wondering how prescriptive level 3 and level 4 might be for people, and in particular these gap tasks. I mean, I'm thinking if you're going for professional recognition through the GTC, do you still feel there's a degree of freedom around people's reading and what kind of things they might be creating or producing to bring back to the next session?
I think for introducing and applying courses, we'll be able to be relatively flexible. I mean, I just want, we agreed as a team that people are much more likely to have a course to have a sustainable impact if there is a session class, or more than one session, and you do something in between. So that's the reason for that. I think the if we get the GTC professional recognition, that will make things a lot more prescriptive in terms of what will be required in an inquiring level course. But I was saying to Rosa Murray, who we've been talking to the other day at the ACTS conference, that actually sitting down, they've got on their website, they have got sort of criteria for applying for professional recognition for a program, and actually sitting down and thinking through what it would involve using their criteria, I think has strengthened what we were planning to do. It was a helpful guide to make what we were planning to do a little bit more rigorous. But yeah, I think the downside would be that it will have to be a lot more nailed down in terms of what would be required, and there would have to be an assessment and all that sort of stuff. But I think the payoff would be amazing, because to be able to do a course in your own school that automatically gave you professional recognition at the TTC would just be amazing. I think it'll probably be worth it, but it's definitely worth a try.
And I know you're not using the language of the new middle standard, the standard for career long professional learning, but you've mentioned professional update and PRD. So have you deliberately sort of been careful about what kind of language or how much of the kind of official policy or GTC language you're using?
No, we the standards have heavily influenced a lot of this, and we will use those a lot, especially in the inquiring courses. And I think actually, you know, we've been kind of, when you sit down and think, well, what are we going to assess in order to achieve this inquiring level course in order to submit it? Okay, we'll look at the standards and they work perfectly. But actually, I think this will trickle down as well. You know, I think we'll be able to use them more and more, no doubt, with the other courses as well. So I think the standards are really useful. And it's such a, from our perspective, because we've been trying to develop the inquiry model within the school for the last few years, to have the standards so laid in before inquiry is really helpful for us to try in our continuing endeavours to increase the involvement. So we don't shy away from the standards. We don't make them the purpose. We try and make it about the kids and learning and having the purpose. So we do always talk about the standards as well, but it's normally three or four slides in. So it's not the reason why we're doing it, to avoid that box ticking effect.
Now we're just coming into the last 10 minutes or so, and I'll just remind listeners, if listening to a live show or the podcast, if you've got a question or comment for Fergal, then you can get in touch in two ways. You can email edutalker@hopemail.co.uk or pop something on Twitter and use the hashtag EduTalk. I just would like to kind of look at Pedagoo in a moment, Fergal, and just how that's evolving. Just going back to a quote that I'm picking off your blog from recent months. I think it maybe relates to the way that you're structuring this PLPL initiative. You said previously you're not a great believer in sharing good practice. You just like the concept of sharing practice. So is that something that you think will just naturally happen through getting colleagues together under particular topics and under particular tasks?
It doesn't happen naturally, I wouldn't say. I think people like to share. People like to think, you know, that what they only want to share the good, if that makes sense. So it's quite a challenge to get people to share more than just the good. And I'm as guilty as anybody else. I think I don't have a problem with people sharing something good. The only question I ask is whose good is it? But the thing that I worry about is if that's all you get is the end of the story, then, you know, if you just see someone's end point and not the process that they went through to get there and the things that they got wrong and the why they were doing it in the first place and what was the problem that they were trying to solve and what was the mistake they made on the way. But if you don't see all that, and I don't see that it necessarily can have a massive amount of effect, because what's the purpose of it? The purpose of it is to learn in a way that you'll go off and do something with that information. But the thing personally, if I've been presented something that is gold standard good, then it puts me off because I think I could never do that, or that wouldn't work in my classroom. That's not realistic. And you sort of naturally write it off. But if I'm presented with the much more detailed story of, okay, so this is what we're doing now, but this is why we did it. This is what was wrong. This was what we were trying to fix. And we tried this first and it didn't work. And then we tried this. Because I think ultimately we should be trying to learn from each other's processes rather than each other's solutions. Because we all work in different places. We all have different contexts. We all have different kids. Everyone's slightly different. Education is not a science. There is no off-the-shelf solution. And until we are able to not just like steal each other's ideas and then try and use them in our room, because that invariably only lasts a few weeks, but actually learn from each other's mistakes and processes and use that to inform our own mistakes and processes and meandering attempts at improvement based on our own learners' needs, then I don't think it's going to really have as much impact. That sort of underpins a lot of what I think, a lot of what I do around Pettigrew as well, actually. So Pettigrew kind of came about because I, you know, on Twitter, 140 characters, you can't get that story out of 140 characters. That's what blogging is much better for. But there are a lot of people on Twitter without blogs. That's not how it was back in my day. And so we tried to create a place where people could blog, but you wouldn't have to have a blog to encourage people to tell the story and not just share the endpoint. And then our events are influenced by that same philosophy. So I think the normal TeachMeet format of 7 2-minutes is energizing and fun. But I think in terms of long-term impact back in classrooms, I think it has a limited effect. I think it has an effect, but it can only go so far, and that's not a criticism. That is just, to me, a reality of it. I don't think the format should change. I think those events should still happen because they're great fun. But I think there's space for another type of event where we get the story, so we have 40 minutes, and we do a day instead of an evening. And we take the time to get under the skin of what it is that's going on, to try and be able to think, well, what would that mean for me? And ask questions. What happened when this happened? Well, if I tried this, would you think this would work? So you could have deeper conversations. So that sort of idea of sharing the journey underpins a lot of what I try to do around this sort of professional learning type stuff.
I think it's interesting just to kind of compare, you know, say a Pettigrew event where people are maybe coming from all over to one space for a particular period of time, and then a school where, you know, you're going to have very close relationships, politics in there as well. I think in both settings, for people to be honest There has to be quite a degree of trust. Clearly, it's clearly working for you. So, is there a kind of secret to how people are made or come to be comfortable to actually tell their story and to be honest in a way that they can say, well, I went down this dead end and then I changed tack and eventually got somewhere, but if I was to do it all over again, I'd do it differently rather than this, as you say, the gold standard approach?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't claim to have a cracked at all. I know what I want, but I'm not sure if I've got it yet. I think with pedigree, in a way it's easier with pedigree because it's sort of like it's sort of like a community. It's people who have a shared value, and because they're doing it in their own time, and it's entirely optional. So if you pitch up on a Saturday for a pedigree event, then you are game, and even if you don't know the other people sat around, because of they're there, you know that they're up for it. So you have a sort of a trust and a certain understanding just by the fact that you're all there together. I think schools are probably more complex because it's not necessarily the same. But I've had some good recent experiences, and I think, see, if you get people talking about teaching and learning, and they have the space and time to do it, and it's framed in such a way that they're able to engage and share openly, it's amazing the levels of honesty and the dialogue that you'll get. I mean, I don't really want to say too much about the example that's in my head, but I had a recent example with a group of staff at my school, and, you know, a bit of preparation, a bit of talking, a bit of introduction, and then I posed a particular question, and I couldn't get back in for about 15 minutes, and they had the most phenomenal, engaging, deep, honest debate about what it means, what learning, what engagement and learning actually means. And it was just fantastic. And I think it's not easy to get, but when you get it, it's fantastic. And so it's worth striving for.
And just finally, Fergal, you know, what is pedigree then at the moment? You know, what's going on and what can we look out for in the near future?
So we redesigned the site recently to try and sort of modernise it and refresh it and get things going a wee bit more. And we've got a lot more content going on the site on pedigree.org, so that's good, and people are always welcome to share their practice on it. One of the downsides of the site having grown so much is that people seem a little bit more threatened to just go on and write a post. But people should always feel able to go on and write a post. That's what it's about. The hashtag on Twitter, Pedigree Friday, is massive. It just seems to be growing every week. Where people share the highlights of the week, which is Kenny Piper's brainchild. It's fantastic. Burst of positivity. And we've got a few events. So there was Pedigree London, was just a couple of weeks ago, which seemed to be massive. There's Pedigree Southwest in Bristol, lined up for June. Kenny exploring running an event in Glasgow at some point. And I'm in the process of organising an event at my school for after the summer sometime. That's all still being hammered out. So, what's going on? It's all good.
Mm-hmm. And Kenny's just put up on Twitter that he feels that Pedigree's all about allowing teachers to tell the story of their teaching and learning. Yep. Captures it all. And I noticed that with with teach meets, and we've all taken part or attended or helped to organise teach meets in the past. Do you find that there's differences between what's going on within Pedigree in the more northerly parts of the British Isles compared to down south?
Are there a difference between the events up here and down in England?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, Well, I've not been to the London one, to be fair, and I've been to a couple of Lisa's ones, Lisa Jane Ash's in Newcastle, which I think there is a bit of a difference. I think, I mean, Lisa's events are phenomenal at her school in Joseph Swan Academy in Gateshead, and the school gave her crazy amount of support. And so she runs Pettigrew Sunshine, which is all singing, all dancing summer event, and Pettigrew Wonderland, which is an all singing, all dancing winter event. And they're fantastic. I think one of the things I've always strived for with my events is to have as little PowerPoint as possible and as much dialogue as possible. So as little sitting and listening, and as much being able to talk as equals with the presenter as possible. For, I think, a variety of reasons, that doesn't happen so much in events in England. I'm not sure why. I think there's a different sort of culture. I don't think it's better or worse. I think it's just different. So I need to be really clear that I'm not judging that, but I have got a particular idea of how I would want to run it, and it seems to go, people accept it. When I've done it, so I've only done two, to be fair, but people are largely accepting of it and don't use a lot of PowerPoint. Whereas it seems to be in England, that's not quite the culture. But that's absolutely fine, because I think what I've resolved with the Pettigrew events is that if they are free, fun, and about sharing practice in a longer format, then I'm good, I'm happy. And they are.
And so what we need to look out for is then just further information about Pettigrew events. You're talking about the one at your school, so just keep checking your blog, fkelly.co.uk, yeah. Pettigrew.org, EduBuzz,
yeah.
and obviously Twitter.
Yeah, all of that, and it will appear.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, listen, Fergal, thank you so much for giving up your time and nearly the end of another working week, and no doubt a busy term. So really appreciate it, and I hope many people listen to the podcast. And thanks to those who've been listening live. So best wishes for the future, Fergal, and I'll hopefully see you soon.